is your home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.
Like the trailer shot, score!
You are now listening to The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McGalley. This is your inside perspective on the NHL, players, the Blue Jackets, and more.
Watch with us. Brought to you by Ohio Health, Nationwide Insurance, Eldorado Scioto Downs, and Huntington.
Here's former Jacket Jody Shelley and the voice of the Jackets, Bob McGalley.
Welcome to the Inside Edge here on 97.1 The Fan. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley. The Blue Jackets, not with a game today, but getting ready to play one tomorrow against the Florida Panthers. And they're coming off a big come-from-behind win in Philadelphia on Monday night. Jody, let's take a look at the last two games. One in Buffalo on Saturday. The Blue Jackets lead 3-0. They blow the lead. They lose the game 5-3. You come to Philly 48 hours later, you're up early 2-0, all of a sudden find yourself in the penalty box and you're down 3-2. But the way they responded in Philly was fantastic. They get the tying goal before the second period's over, go ahead in the third, add an empty netter, and win it 5-3. When you talk about teams making quick adjustments, that was a nice turnaround.
Yeah, and it's really great that the team found its footing on its own. I mean, you look at the Buffalo game, yeah, that was not good. Too many penalties. Things got away from them, didn't play a 60-minute game. But listen, they rebounded with an effort, and there was no point during that game, even though they gave up so many power plays and it looked like they were just handing the game to Philly. In the third period, you could just feel the confidence of the Blue Jackets say, okay, we're just going to – if we get up by one, which we think we will, we're just going to win this game. And there's a real – and Torts talked about previously a confidence, a swagger, if you will. It's there in the locker room. We're around these guys all season long. There's a swagger. There's a confidence. They have not lost three games in a row one time this season. And that tells me more than anything. You know, we break down every game and how they win. And it's so important for them to come back and not only be up and then and fail, but come back and win. I think that's so important. There's going to be moments where they're going to need to come back being down three or four goals, and they got to find a way. And you're right, Bob. Important right now to find ways, and they sure did that the other night, and they got to be happy. Even though they took too many penalties, they're good enough to overcome that.
You know, to take that one step further, when I talked to Cam Atkinson after the game on Monday, he said, we don't lose two in a row. So the heck with three in a row. They're right. Not about losing two in a row. And the way he said it with that confidence, you could see that it's not just him in his own mind. That's a group mindset.
Yeah, and that's so important because I remember being on teams where losing, it was, for me, devastation. The losing was in the locker room. If it was a loss, excuse me, it was devastation the next day. You lost one game in Philly. It was in the paper, the pressure from the coaches, the players were sick. Two in a row, it was just like it was doomsday. So you kind of get that here from the Columbus Blue Jackets that they are making adjustments. They understand that if they do blow a game, excuse me, that they can get back on it and get that win the next night. And that's something that really is good for this team. And it's, I tell you what, it's amazing what a little confidence will do.
You know, you and I were talking in Philly the other day. When you look at the Flyers team, as you said, when you played there, there was an expectation and a mindset. And Ed Snyder was running that team for many, many years. He has now, unfortunately, passed away. And things changed there because that attitude kind of came right from the top, didn't it? Didn't it come down from Mr. Snyder that losing's unacceptable?
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, it was his team, and you knew that there was an ownership presence. But in the same time, he understood the city he was in, and he carried the torch of that city through the organization. And listen, when you're in Philly, there's enough pressures from the outside. You don't need extra pressure from the inside. So he didn't come down very often and speak to the group, but you knew there was messages coming from Mr. Snyder. I wouldn't say things have changed much because I think the players there, when you play sports in Philadelphia, it's very clear where you stand and what's expected of you. And if you don't meet those, you're going to hear some boos from time to time, or they'll chase you out of town in a heartbeat. So, you know, there's out. External pressure, excuse me, but there's also that pressure that these guys have from within. And you look at their leadership, it's young leadership. It's Jake Voracek, it's Claude Giroux, and it's Wayne Simmonds. And that might be part of their growing pains right now is they got to figure out a way, much like the Blue Jackets, young leadership, but what are we? Who's driving this? How do we get to that next step? And I have a feeling that team has so much talent, just a little bit more kind of grooming with the leadership, and I think they're right there.
Yeah, when you talk about the Blue Jackets and who's driving it, the young guys for sure, That third goal in Philadelphia, the one that Zach Werenski scores right off the faceoff, that is a huge turning point of that game.
Oh, it's amazing to watch this young guy play. And the poise he has and the determination he has. And off the faceoff, it's a set play with Seth Jones that him and Seth set up, and it works out, and the kid gets his 10th goal, and I'm sure he got a scoring bonus for that. That smile on his face, it just wasn't to score that 10th goal for fun, which is fun to see too. That's something that, you know, it's a milestone to hit. So good on Zach. And, you know, I go back to the Philly team, and I look at the Blue Jackets team. I think there's a real comparison, but I think the difference is the leadership and the coaching. I think John Tortorella now has put his stamp in a big way on this organization, but this organization was young and ready for that person to come in that big personality, that person with no nonsense. So if you look at what the Blue Jackets were the last year and a half, kind of the same as Philly where they're at right now, but now it's a legitimate team, and it's just amazing to see what they've done by sticking with it and adding youth like Zach Werenski.
Zach Werenski setting rookie records for points, for assists. He has been terrific. Well, another milestone was set this weekend when the Blue Jackets played in Buffalo as television play-by-play broadcaster Jeff Rimmer broadcast his 2,000th game in the National Hockey League. Jody and I had a chance to catch up with him earlier today at practice. First of all, congratulations. You made it past the 2,000 mark. We had some questions. You got to 1999, but we were a little bit worried about you there on Saturday in Buffalo, but you made it through.
Yeah, the plane kind of got in my way as we landed in Buffalo, and wasn't me. It was all our aircraft that brought the team from Columbus to Buffalo, and all of a sudden I got off the plane and I was going to pick up my luggage, and I'm certain 100% that the plane moved just a bit.
They pulled it forward. Jeff hit his head and fell down, but he bounced right back up. And unfortunately doesn't remember anything about the 2000th game, but that's okay. But on a serious note, Jeff, it's a long journey. It's not just the 2000 NHL games for you, but there's also a lot of other things that you've done throughout your career in these, 40 years?
40 years in the National Hockey League, and it all started in Montreal in 1977. I was a pregame host, in-between periods host for the Canadiens. I saw four Stanley Cups in Montreal. Went to Washington after 7.5 years in Montreal, and I was the host for pre and post game on Home Team Sports, then the network of choice for the Washington Capitals, and of course then moved on to Florida. And that first year in Florida, I managed to do two teams. I did the Capitals schedule and a very small schedule for the Panthers in their inaugural season. And, of course, during the lockout, moved here to Columbus and really grateful for the opportunity to come here. And here we are. I guess it means I've been around for a long time.
So you were only a two-timer for one season.
Well, I guess that's the case.
Jeff, you know, I've got to work with you for 10%, almost 10% of your games, I think. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. But I'm wondering, I haven't asked you this yet. Do you remember your first game?
Honestly, I don't. I was pretty nervous that night. I remember that. And I remember very little else of it. I chose, and maybe this is a good thing, to remember some of the highlights. And the biggest highlight, and I know a lot of folks have asked me, the biggest highlight was, number one, the Blue Jackets playing their first postseason game. And that really outdid the Florida Panthers going all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. And a big reason why we didn't get an opportunity and wouldn't get an opportunity, Jody, as you know, should our team here in Columbus, the Blue Jackets, go a long way, because after the first round, it's all network television. But the biggest thrill had to be that game four in the Pittsburgh-Columbus Blue Jackets postseason series here at Nationwide, when the Jackets won in overtime on a Nick Foligno goal. And as I've said many times, I thought the roof was coming off here at Nationwide.
And the other thing, and that was, man, that was a memorable moment for all of us. The other thing I was wondering was, why play-by-play, and did you go to school for this skill?
Another great question, Jody. I wanted to do, and I go back to my hockey roots in my attempt to become a National Hockey League player, because that was my goal. Growing up in Toronto, love the sport. I used to be a rink rat. I hung around Maple Leaf Gardens, the old home of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I would literally wait outside the subway station for Detroit, Chicago, Boston, just to name three teams, for them to come off the subway and then walk to the gardens, oh, maybe a half a block. And I used to beg the likes of Gordie Howe, Bobby Hull, and Stan Mikita if they would take me in to the gardens to watch the pregame skate on Saturday morning. Moved on after my dad passed away to Calgary. And, of course, the story's well known. John Davidson was the first person that I met in high school in homeroom. And he convinced me, after a couple of outdoor skates, that I should try out for this AAA hockey team. I was cut before practice even started. I knew I was in trouble with my bib number in the 200s. There was literally no place on the ice to skate, and I got tapped on the shoulder by the coach and said, "Hey, kid, house league starts on Wednesday." I went to house league on Wednesday at Kingsland Outdoor Rink, and I was on the snowbank. And that was for house league. So I knew at that point my chances of making it to the National Hockey League were slim and none. And once that was the case, I had one dream and one goal, and that was to broadcast play-by-play in the National Hockey League. I went to Mount Royal College. I was in the I was in the first communications class there at Mount Royal. And I did all the play-by-play for the Alberta Junior Hockey League team, the Calgary Canucks, and moved on to the Calgary Centennials, where one of my former partners, Danny Gare, and, of course, John Davidson starred. They went all the way to the Western Hockey League Western Conference Final against the Edmonton Oil Kings, and then John Davidson was picked up by the Oil Kings for the Memorial Cup. But I had a chance to do some of the play-by-play there, and ultimately, after doing the Olympics in 1976, ended up in Montreal and started my way towards a play-by-play career.
Wow, that's quite a story, and it's impressive. I mean, 2,000 games, and you said something interesting there. We're speaking with Jeff Rimmer, play-by-play broadcaster for the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's nice enough to join us on the show today. Jeff, did it really work when you begged those guys to get in for pregame skate?
Yeah, it did. It did. Bobby Hull was terrific. In fact, I'll tell you a sidebar story. I went to practice with the Detroit Red Wings one Saturday morning, and Sid Abel, then the coach and general manager of the Red Wings, invited me to come down to the old Royal York Hotel where every team used to stay, and he bought me lunch. That was probably my first taste of buying lunches, and I haven't stopped since.
You got to tell the Pete Rose story, going back to your days in Montreal of broadcasting, because you didn't just do hockey. You did radio talk show, and I know you've kind of claimed that you got the Expos to sign Pete Rose as a free agent. Is that true?
I've got a picture to prove it, and in fact, the Blue Jackets asked me for some old photos, and I included the old photo. I don't know if they're going to actually put it in the video, but I on January the 19th, 1984, the Expos had a major news conference. Charles Bronfman, then the owner of the Expos, stood up at the podium after saying in November, "I don't care what Jeff Rimmer is saying on his talk show, we are not going to sign Pete Rose." And the whole point of getting Pete Rose was, if you remember those early 80s seasons, the Expos had a great team, but they were missing the intangibles. They were missing the leadership. They had Carter, Dawson, Tim Raines. Coincidentally, they're all three of them are in the Hall of Fame. They had Steve Rogers, Jeff Reardon. I can just start naming the entire roster. And they didn't know how to win. Unfortunately, they never did win. They made it twice to the National League playoffs. They lost on Blue Monday when Rick Monday hit the game-winning home run. But I'm digressing here and getting away from the story. Anyway, I had Pete on the talk show once a week. And Pete would come on and talk about why he could help the Expos, and he went chapter and verse on how he could help, how he could play, how he could make them a better team. What happened was we went to training camp, spring training in Florida, and Pete and I were best buddies. We went to Gary Carter's 30th birthday, and that was my first exposure to Pete the Gambler, because he had betting sheets. It was about this time, the NCAA tournament, and Gary had tables all over the back of his house and in the kitchen and in the family room. And, well, it was supposed to be for people to eat, but Rose had all the betting sheets right there. Move along, fast forward. It's a Thursday night. The Expos are playing, as it turned out, the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Expos lose the game on a defensive replacement, and I'll tell you, Doug Flynn, another member of the Big Red Machine, was put in. He had asked earlier in the day, either play me or trade me. Rodney Scott had beaten him out for the second baseman's job. They put Flynn in as a defensive replacement. He gave up two errors after the game, and after a loss of 5-4, Rose went, I mean, nuclear. He started telling all the media there that I, Jeff Rimmer, was the most negative talk show host he had ever heard. He said he'd worked in Philadelphia, worked in Cincinnati, where they're pretty tough, and he said I was tougher. Went on and on and on. It was headlines in the paper on Friday. Friday night, I did my post-game show from the restaurant in Montreal, Salon 76, and I had, for folks that remember the old Laverne and Shirley show, Squiggy, who was a good friend. David Lander is his name. He's an actor from Los Angeles. He's a huge Pirates fan. He and his wife came up from L.A. to spend the weekend. He was my guest. Rose called in the show and demanded I apologize for trying to ruin his reputation with the fans. I refused. He hung up. Saturday were the NBC Game of the Week. I go in for post-game clips with the players. As I walked in, Chris Spire, who just recently left the Reds as their bench coach, and Jim Wolford, a utility player, they were standing at the door waiting for me to come in with boxing gloves, and the whole team in unison were going, Pete, 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 Rimmer, 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 Pete, 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 Rimmer, Rimmer, Rimmer. I walked over to Pete's locker. I had a cassette. I said, Pete, here, listen to this cassette. You tell me where I'm trying to ruin your reputation. Long and short of it is, I saw Pete get out of his chair, and he was going to grab me. I had my brand-new Expos golf shirt on. He ripped the collar, kind of tried to choke me. It was bedlam in the clubhouse. Flynn came over and started kicking me. My best friend, the late Gary Carter, came over, threw Flynn across the locker. In walked the president of the team, John McHale, and said, what is going on? Jeff Rimmer is an ambassador for our ball club. Bill Verdon was the manager at the time. He got yelled at by John McHale. The radio television ownership demanded an apology. Pete apologized on a Sunday morning in the owner's box. I accepted it immediately because I really like Pete. On Monday, I got a phone call from Baltimore, and I was negotiating to go there. They wanted me there now. Oh, this is exactly what we want, because it was national headlines. Marv Albert was doing the NBC Game of the Week in the studio, and he says, ah, Pete Rose, swinging and missing on the field today, swung and missed off the field. And, of course, it was in the New York Times. It was everywhere. Imagine, if it happened today, not that I want anybody to hit me, but I probably would own the team. Fast forward, I accept the job in Baltimore, and knowing that I'm going to get a job with the Washington Capitals on a part-time basis moving forward, Pete Rose called me a week and a half later. I was stringing at the time for Brent Musburger and his CBS radio show, and I got a phone call from Pete saying, I owe you one, and told me that he was going to be named the next day and wanted me to break the story. And I did with Brent Musburger on CBS Radio that Pete Rose was going to Cincinnati as playing manager. How about that?
Wow. That is quite the story. But no hockey player ever wanted to take a swing at, or ever did. I shouldn't say ever wanted. They never did.
Not that I know of. I mean, I'm sure there were many along the way, or maybe some wives over the course of time. Probably the most outspoken I was about a player was in Washington, and we became pretty good friends. In fact, he was a neighbor, was Peter Bondra, who was an outstanding talent. No, he's not Hall of Fame caliber, but Peter was a very, very good hockey player. And I called him a coach's killer because about two or three coaches in Washington lost their job based on his inability to play to the highest level. And other than that, I've been pretty tame. I kind of let Jody go out on a limb all the time.
Yeah, I think we're safe in the booth, Jeff. I mean, I haven't seen anyone get too riled up. You seem, I can't imagine you stirring things up, but you don't have your own radio show anymore. And maybe I think you should get one.
Well, we do right now, and we appreciate you being on it. And, of course, tomorrow night, prior to the game against the Florida Panthers, Jeff is going to be recognized by the Blue Jackets. And does that mean more to you, too, that it's going to be done with the Panthers here because those two organizations you're most closely tied to?
Yeah, it's a nice touch. And when I was approached and asked if I would agree to being honored, I said, as long as it's not my retirement party. And I was assured of that, so I think it's great that Florida is here. But really, aside from that run in 1996, the thrill for me is to be in this great community. The fans are terrific here in Columbus. I owe a lot to Blue Jacket management, the late Mr. Mack, and, of course, the McConnell family and those people that are affiliated in ownership with the Blue Jackets. It's been really an honor and a pleasure to broadcast Blue Jackets hockey, and this city means a lot to me, and certainly the fans, and I think the fans are going to be rewarded here. I think this team is on the upward trajectory, and I think it's only a matter of time.
Jeffrey, thank you very much. We do appreciate it, and again, congratulations.
Thank you, and I'm honored that you guys have asked me to come on, and I look forward to a long playoff run. Let's hope.
Enjoy your new Escalade.
Hey, I asked. Well, actually, I didn't ask. I was told. I said, don't expect a car. And I said, why not? I mean, Martin Saint-Louis, he got that beautiful truck. I thought the lead. And I did more games.
He retired.
Oh, that's
you would
a good,
have to retire.
Good point. Yeah. Very, very good point. I left that out.
Now he's reassessing. What? There's a car? No. That is Jeff Rimmer. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. Bob McElligott and Jody Shelley with you. The Blue Jackets getting set for a game tomorrow night against the Florida Panthers. Sam Gagne, red hot for the Blue Jackets, got another goal in Philly on Monday. And Jody and I had a chance to sit down and talk with him earlier today. You went through some struggles there for a while, but now it seems like your game's come back. Your scoring has come back. Yeah. And your game's been there all along, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, I felt good. Even during that stretch, I felt like I was doing a lot of good things. You know, especially defensively, I think that's an area of my game I just want to continue to improve at. You know, I think obviously offense is, you know, one of my roles here. It's important that I'm producing and helping the team win that way. But if you're not going to be able to do that every night, you got to make sure you're taking care of your defensive responsibilities. So, you know, it's something when you're struggling to put the puck in the net, you know, there's different areas of the game that you can contribute in, and you want to keep trying to get better in those areas.
The whole time that you've been here, it's been kind of it's a process. You started here, you started at center, you got scratched for a game, you came back, and you were on the wing. And you were on the wing for a long time, and Torchwood said that he'd liked you better on the wing than at center. Then because of injury, you've had to move back to the middle, but it really looks like you've found your game there again.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like to have that on my game where I can be versatile and fill in wherever needed. You know, I think it's an important part of a team to be able to have guys that can step in, you know, fill in roles when, you know, they're called upon. So I think, you know, that's an important thing. But at the same time, I think you want to get comfortable at a certain position and make sure that, you know, you keep getting better. I think it's been good at center. I've got a chance to play with Hartsey and Bjorki and find some chemistry there. And, you know, obviously playing with Hartsey all year, we're starting to really feed off each other. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Sam, I'm just curious because you're a veteran guy. You know, you started as a young guy, a part of that Oilers organization that had so many young prospects, high-end prospects, and you get to a point this off season where you've got to make a decision. And it sounded like right away Columbus to you was a good fit. And I'm just wondering if you go back to that and where you're at now. I mean, we're closing on the end of the season, and I don't know if it could have gone any better for you to this point.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at things this summer, you know, I didn't have plenty of options. But at the same time, when I got the offer from Columbus, I had a chance to think about it, and I felt like it was a really good fit. You know, number one, I felt like I was getting an opportunity to play an offensive role, and you know, something I was comfortable with. But at the same time, I looked at the team they had here, and you know, I felt like there was a chance to win, and I felt like, you know, the year before was kind of an underachieving year, a lot like kind of what I went through myself. So I felt like it was a really good fit that way, and guys had a chip on their shoulders ready to prove people wrong. And, yeah, things have gone really well for myself, but, you know, also for the team, and I think that makes everyone else look better. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun to be a part of.
And when you look at this your approach and your value here now, it's got to be exciting to see that, hey, you know, you got to go through a bit of the process with the coaching staff, but now you've really found your role.
Yeah, I mean, I've been through it before. Obviously, you know, been with a lot of different coaches now. I think it's seven head coaches now. So I think, you know, the good thing with Torts is, you know, he's really honest and he lets you know where you stand all the time. So I think there's less of a feeling out process, and it didn't take me as long to kind of figure out what was expected of me and you know, what they needed. So I think it's been good that way. You know, I feel comfortable within this group. You know, I feel like there's a defined role for me in terms of, you know, trying to create offense and bringing a skill game to the lineup while, you know, taking care of those defensive responsibilities. So it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed the group and, you know, enjoyed, you know, everything that comes along with winning hockey games, and hopefully we can keep pushing forward here.
You talk about Torts, and it's funny. I mean, he wastes no time outlining guidelines and what he expects, and it's refreshing as an older player. But are you surprised at his approach? I mean, coming in, I don't know if you knew anything about him, but...
Yeah, I mean, I had a chance to talk to him in the summer a little bit before I signed, and I think just from hearing from other guys, it was just, you know, when Torts tells you something, he's honest about it, and he lets you know where you stand. And, you know, I think as a veteran guy, you know, I've been through a lot of different coaches. You know, I like that style where I know what's expected of me, and you know, I know where I stand, and it's something that there's really no surprises. You come to the rink, and you know exactly what's expected of you, and that's an exciting prospect for me. And you know, sometimes your feelings might get hurt, but you know, that's part of being a pro, and it helps you get better at the end of the day, and that's what you want. So I've really enjoyed playing for him, and coaching staff's been great all year to all of us, and it's been a big reason why we've had this success that we've had.
Talking with Sam Gagne of the Blue Jackets, and, you know, it's hard to believe you're sitting here having this conversation. We were just in Philly a couple of days ago, and I was thinking, this Philadelphia team sent Sam back to the American Hockey League last year to play in Lehigh Valley. Is it almost stunning to you that you're having these kind of conversations now, just about a year later?
Honestly, no. I mean, I have confidence in my ability, and, you know, I know how hard I work at it, and you know, that's one of the things I was looking for this summer, was just a spot where I was going to get an opportunity to play important minutes. And just talking to management and coaches here, it felt like I was going to get that opportunity. So I think offensively, I always knew I can get back to the level that, you know, I've been accustomed to in my career. I think, you know, defensively is where I wanted to continue to try and grow. And I think we have a really good group here to kind of help me with that. And I feel like I've taken strides there. And you know, I think it's the overall game you want to continue to build, and I think being part of a good team helps everything out. And you know, it's been a lot of fun to be part of that process of our team growing and getting better and better. And you know, it's something that you want to continue to push forward here.
You talked about playing with Scott Hartnell, and you guys are kind of similar to older guys who've had a kind of bide your time and wait your turns on this team and utilize the minutes that you get. But as it's gone further into the year, here you are in March. You guys are both hot. Oliver Bjorkstrand, I know, helps that with both of you. But do you feel like you're getting close to playing at the top of your game right at the right time of the year?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be part of a winning team, everyone has to buy in and accept their role and do the best they can within that role to help push the team game forward. And I think, you know, that's really important for a team that's going to go, you know, hopefully far in the playoffs. And, you know, that's our mindset. So I think... Yeah, both of us right now, along with Bjorki, we're trying to continue to push to try and get better and help this team move forward and, yeah, hopefully get hot at the right time.
How have the young guys rubbed off on some of you veterans, and how have they driven this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely nice to have those young guys around. It really pushes the group forward in terms of, you know, that youthful exuberance and coming to the rink smiling and, you know, feeling good every day. And I think it definitely brings the energy room or the level of the energy up in the room. So, you know, they've been great. I think the good thing about our young guys, they handle everything with kind of a veteran poise. And, you know, they've been awesome for us all year and continue to push the team forward.
Sam, I watch a lot of veteran players, especially. They've got people they rely on or they can count on. During the season, there's ups and downs. You've got your dad who played in the NHL, and I know you speak to former coaches. You've got relationships with players. How big is that in your in what you do and your approach to your game?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, I think you have to feed off of all the resources that you can to try and get better. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that have gone through, you know, the ups and downs of an NHL season before me, and you know, I lean on my dad a lot for that. I think it's always it's a grind. I mean, there's different parts of the season where you feel really good about yourself and things are going really smoothly, and there's different parts where it's it seems like everything's an uphill battle. So I think it's about staying even keeled and trying to just fight through those as you go along. And it's important to have kind of outside resources to help with that. I think obviously my wife and my family are a huge part of that, and it's something that you don't do it without a support system, that's for sure.
And one last thing for me, who were your veterans when you came in, and how much do you think about them and you looking up to them when you were a young guy, and how that relates kind of to this group?
Yeah, I mean, when I first came in, I had guys like Sean Horkoff. He was a big one for me. Ethan Morrow, Steve Staios. These guys are guys that were really good pros, and they handled themselves on and off the ice with a lot of class. And I think my off-ice approach in terms of the way I handle my summers and come into camp in shape and handle the season of playing all 82 games, where there's a lot of grind throughout the season. A lot of it comes from them and just how they were to handle themselves as professionals. And I think you learn a lot from guys like that. And hopefully the young guys in here, it's the same with us veteran guys. I think that's what you have to kind of do. Go about your business every day and try and get better. And it just kind of rubs off on the team, and everyone gets better because of it.
Sam, thank you very much for taking the time with us, and good luck against the Panthers tomorrow.
All right, thanks very much.
That is Sam Gagne of the Blue Jackets, back with more of the Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. Blue Jackets getting set to take on the Florida Panthers tomorrow night. Where will they be in the standings when they get there? Jody, the Washington Capitals have let the Penguins and the Blue Jackets back in the race for the top of the Metropolitan Division. They had dropped four in a row, Washington had, before they won at home last night over the Minnesota Wild. Pittsburgh, who's gone ahead of the Blue Jackets, they play Philly tonight in a big rivalry game. So the Blue Jackets will know exactly by tomorrow morning where they stand points-wise coming in. You know, you've talked about this. We were talking about this months ago, how the standings will change so much each and every day. You can't watch them every day because it'll drive you crazy. But now at this time of the year, as we get late in the season, scoreboard watching is almost essential, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the fun part of the year. And you talk about the top of the East, the Metropolitan. How about the top of the West, too? I mean, it's fun to watch Chicago, Minnesota. They're flip-flopping spots. San Jose is up there. It's crazy what's going on there. But you've got to watch other teams. And that's something that's interesting now. The Blue Jackets obviously have set up now for the last month where it looks like Pittsburgh is that first-round matchup. But things could change, as you mentioned. Washington at the top. New York falling back a little bit. They were pushing a little bit. Pittsburgh might push up to the top. But the Blue Jackets would love to get that number one spot, because that allows you to play the number one wild card. Now, some people talk about the spot would be that number two wild card position, or the number one wild card position, because then you switch over to the Atlantic, and that would be something to reckon with, because you would stay there the entire time. But Bob, scoreboard watching has always been fun this time of year, because even when you're out, those teams that are coming in the Nationwide Arena, Buffalo, they want to know that they can take a notch out of the Blue Jackets' plans. They want to upset. These teams that are squeaking to get in, last night there were some big games. Tampa Bay squeaked out a win. They were the target last night to try to be upset. The Florida Panthers, they're playing against the Toronto Maple Leafs. That was a big game for both teams, and Florida ends up just trouncing the Maple Leafs. So it's fun to watch the storylines. It's going to go right down to the end. The Blue Jackets won't know who they're playing. Well, they might know sooner than later, but they won't know in the next 10 days. And it's such a fun time of year, and the storylines, and tomorrow night with the Florida Panthers here, those guys have put themselves, well, they were back in a pretty strong position again, and now they're really in a desperate situation. So they're coming off a strong win last night, like I mentioned, but tomorrow could be a big game for the Florida Panthers, who've got a lot of those young players back in the lineup.
Yeah, they are the healthiest that we've seen them. This is the third and final meeting of the year, but Huberdeau wasn't playing before. Barkov was injured. All those guys are back. You're absolutely right. They're more of a dangerous team. But let's analyze that little crossover that you talked about, because a couple of weeks ago, That looked like a fantastic opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. If you slide to the wild card, okay, so you move over, you play Montreal in the first round, and then the winner of Boston, Ottawa. That looked like an easier path. Now, all of a sudden, Carey Price has gotten hot. But what's been hotter is the Ottawa Senators, as they are only 1 point behind the Canadiens. And let's be honest, the Blue Jackets and Senators played three times this year, and the only game the Blue Jackets won was an ugly, weird 7-6 overtime game in Ottawa. The other two games, they were basically shut down through that Ottawa trap. So that's not exactly a great matchup if you think about the previous games between the two. Then on the other side, now, if Pittsburgh winds up number one and Washington gets bumped and you play the Capitals in the first round, that's not a great matchup for you. That's intimidating. I still like the Penguins as a number one matchup because of the way the Blue Jackets play against them. But now you've got Tampa. Look where they're at. They're lurking 1 point out of the wild card spot. This is a team that 2 years ago went to the Stanley Cup final. They've been to the Eastern Conference final. They are dangerous. It looks like the trades that Steve Yzerman made there, you know, he wouldn't give it away because he thought his team was still in the playoff race. He made the right call. He made the trades that he needed to trade, or the guys he needed to trade. He's 1 point out. I think if they make it in, they're the most dangerous team in the Eastern Conference, which means finishing as the number one seed isn't exactly a safe place to be either.
Right, and these are the problems you have when you make the playoffs, right? And it's one of those things. What, do you want to have your head down and have to grind out the last 6 weeks of the season just to get in? No, I mean, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you play, and these are what this is the luxury of being in early. Oh, if we could play this team, if we could play that team, this would be better. For the broadcasters, it doesn't matter to a certain degree. I mean, hey, Florida'd be great in April, but you know what I mean. Hey, Bob, listen, let's go back to your first point. Okay, I still think it'd be safer to go over to the Atlantic Division. Okay, Montreal's hot, Ottawa's hot. I'm fine with that. But if you look at the Metropolitan Division, right now the Blue Jackets are going to face either the defending Stanley Cup champions or I think the team that has the most to prove in the National Hockey League in the Washington Capitals. The other team for me would be the San Jose Sharks, who's out west. Capitals won the President's Trophy last year. They lost to the Penguins in the second round. It's one of those matchups that will happen this year where a team that is one of the best teams in the league will be lost in the second round through the way it's set up right now. We'll be lost in the first round, really, in the Metropolitan Division. And then, to your point, Tampa Bay is in the playoffs. Listen, this team has been to the conference finals. They've been the team to go there and lose a couple times. They've got so much experience. This is their time of year. There's 13 games left in the season. Actually, they've got 13 games left in the season right now. They have lots of hockey. They know how to win. They've got their players playing well. Vasilevskiy has now got the net. They've got their roles figured out. Braden Point's a young player that stepped in there and is doing phenomenal. To me, they're trending up at the right time, and they're going to be very dangerous with their experience. Hats off to them on making those trades and really sticking with a game plan in Coach Cooper and his coaching staff because I tell you what, they know how to break down a seven-game series.
Yeah, there was about a month ago, month and a half ago, there were reasons to consider firing John Cooper. They didn't do it. And that's, you know, sometimes people get antsy in this sport, and they do make those calls before they should, and they don't have the patience. So you're right, kudos to them. Oh, and by the way, Steven Stamkos is going to be coming back, so there's a huge addition for that team.
I mean, just think about that. I mean, he's one of the best pure shooters in the National Hockey League, one of the best hockey players in the world. He's been on the shelf. They've struggled all year. They really couldn't find their identity. And I think that has something to do with burnout. Even though the playoffs go long, you know, they don't go as long some years for this team as others. But there's burnout that carries over from season to season. And, hey, this is the time they pick it up.
Let's look at the West, where there's a really good race going on in the Central. And these two teams are both in the discussion for the President's Trophy as well. Chicago, Minnesota. Chicago has finally overtaken the Minnesota Wild once again. And the Chicago Blackhawks, people talk about them for the last month. They are just lying in the weeds. They're waiting to flip the switch and turn it on. And I think it's obvious they have flipped that switch.
Isn't it scary? I mean, another team that knows how to win, another team that is in a situation where the most important time of the year and the only time of the year that really matters is the playoffs. And Hopefully the Blue Jackets are in that situation for years to come here where, hey, you know, let's just say they go and they disappoint in the first or second or third round of this playoff season where they don't win the Stanley Cup. They've got to wait all summer. They've got to wait all regular season to get back to the dance. And that's really what a lot of these organizations do and have to go through. And I think Chicago, they picked up a veteran defenseman who's not even ready to play, but a guy they're familiar with in Johnny Oduya at the trade deadline, because they're that type of team that is tuning because they know how to win, they know what it takes, and they're bringing in familiar guys. I think that speaks volumes about where that organization is. And those two guys they got in Taves and Kane, it's so impressive to watch them dial things up.
Yeah, it is impressive. Scary impressive, as a matter of fact. The hottest team in the Western Conference right now, and this is not a play on words, it is the Calgary Flames. When they beat Pittsburgh in a shootout the other night, that was their 10th consecutive win. Been a lot of double-digit streaks in the NHL this year. But Calgary, you know, this is a team we saw several months ago and didn't look like it was going anywhere. Brian Elliott, they acquired from the St. Louis Blues to be their starter, and Chad Johnson had overtaken him for that job. All of a sudden, Brian Elliott is lights out. The Calgary Flames won 10 in a row, and they're making a real push in the Pacific.
It's unbelievable. And it's really funny because we break down the game. I mean, there was I like how people always talk about American Thanksgiving being a measuring stick. And it's like, really? Like, go tell the guys in the room that, because that's not how it is. You're going to have Tampa. You're going to have Chicago. You're going to have teams that surge at the end of the year just because they're waiting. And you're going to have the Calgary Flames, who just kind of got the right combination, if you will, about 6 weeks ago, and from then it's just taken off. Teams got to be healthy. Teams got to rely on some things. I look at some teams, too, where you have players who are in trade discussions, which the Blue Jackets had none this year. It's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of dysfunction for a team when you know a guy's getting traded. It's just kind of hanging over the room. Oh, you're still here. What are you hearing? Because he's telling you, yeah, my agent's telling me it's between three or four teams, and I don't know. Oh, it sounds like these guys. You're waiting for that kind of – you're waiting for everything to kind of fall. And finally, when the deadline comes, even for the guys that think they're getting traded, there's no talks, but they hear whispers of it, that's stressful too. Finally, when that deadline passes and you're there still or you've been moved, there's a huge relief with you, your wife, your family, your mom and dad. They all know now you're settled and where you're going to be. So you put that into factor, that's where you get a little bit of a surge too at the end of the season.
And that's why there are exciting times right now. Blue Jackets tomorrow taking on the Florida Panthers, 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:45 right here on The Fan. That'll do it for The Inside Edge. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligot, and thanks for listening to 97.1 The Fan.
This has been The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligot.
And I got two words for you. Game over.
Lodge with us. Brought to you by Ohio Health, Nationwide Insurance, Eldorado Scioto Downs, and Huntington.
On your flagship station for the Columbus Blue Jackets, Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.